Kyle, I believe that people are going to call us liars. They're going to call us cheaters. They're going to say it wasn't fair what we did, because today what we are going to do is we're going to cram 3 Marvel movies into 1 episode, deviating from our 1 movie per episode, just so we can like get it done before Endgame.
Oh, God,
there's
yeah.
no way.
No.
Yeah, there's no way we could do 6 movies in the next week.
Yeah.
Is that how many?
I think
a little over a week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what? It comes out, the 26th? Is that it?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, 11 days.
Well, I'll be seeing it on the 25th.
Ah, okay.
So
I'm
for all you lamos out there that got those tickets afterwards, are you one of those lamos?
Oh, well, yeah. I'm still trying to figure out what posse, I'm going to go with.
Oh, you got to get a crew together.
Uh-huh. Exactly. And, everybody's got kind of their own little cliques at work, so I'm trying to decide what clique I'm going to choose to go with.
Damn, you're rolling thick, son.
Yeah, well, and Mortal Kombat 11 comes out that day, so I'm going to be, very indisposed before the movie, because I need to get my fighting game on as well. I've been waiting for that for a while. So
yeah, dude, you got that nerd street cred to keep up with. You feel me?
Exactly. I got a reputation to uphold. Absolutely.
Well, let's get it started then. So if you're joining us just now, as I mentioned, we were trying to watch every movie up until Endgame, and in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that is, and we were reviewing and rating, in our opinion, the validity of each of these movies, the acting, the connection to the comic books, and, getting up to here. There was another podcast that I personally connected to that gave me this idea, I fortunately was able to interview one of the co-hosts of them last week for last week's episode. So go check that out. It's an interview with Emmanuel Delphin of Delphin Pod. Like I said, one of 3 hosts on that podcast, Countdown to Infinity. They have many more podcasts on their network, so check it out. But what we're trying to do here is something similar that they did in Countdown to Infinity. But, what you get in this one that's different than that one is Kyle's opinion.
Yes.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. So we're going to hear Kyle and I's opinion today on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Thor Ragnarok.
Ooh, that one's going to be a good one.
Let's do it with Guardians Volume 2. Mm-hmm. So this movie was a highly anticipated sequel from James Gunn's first the beginning stages of his work in the comic book realm. So James Gunn has done other films. I believe he did Slither. He did Tromeo. He's done some other ones that not a lot of people know of, and this was a huge movie. The first one was, and then the second one was also massively successful. The first time I saw this in the theater, I was LOLing, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I think the first one was lightning in a bottle, definitely. I don't think the second one is as strong as the first, because I wasn't as surprised, because Guardians 1 was so different than other Marvel films that I didn't have that wow factor. I still thought it was great, but I was coming in knowing what to expect instead of being shocked at, oh God, how could a Marvel movie be this funny? Because most of them had the comedy, but they weren't on this level of funny, where it was almost like a half comedy, half superhero movie, is what the Guardians series is, where you get just as much laughs as you get superhero drama, which I liked.
Well, it's interesting you say, this one didn't really, it wasn't as strong as the first. I know what you mean. The first one was a big slap in the face of here's a new era or a new section of the MCU that we haven't seen before. Not only a new chapter of humor and comedy and different characters, a completely different cast of characters that joined together as a ragtag team, as we talked about in our Guardians Volume 1 episode, a extraterrestrial and, a far from Earth tale. In this second one, what I think the reason I did like it is because at this point there's this assumed and a very good assumption that we know these characters, and that these characters have evolved and connected as a family now at this point. And so we have Groot, Rocket. Well, we have Baby Groot, Rocket, Drax, Gamora, and Nebula's in there. Well, shit, I guess it's everywhere. It's Star-Lord. We've got Yondu. So every character that we fell in love with in the first one is back in this one, and their presence is stronger than ever, which is something that, you know, you would hope to see in that second film, and you would hope to see the director continue that path and not necessarily, like, destruct that family unit.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he made it stronger, and Drax, hands down, one of the funniest characters in the Marvel Cinematic
Universe. Nailed it. Like, absolutely nailed it. His invisibility stuff was probably the one that, like, got the most laughs when I saw it in the theater. Like, it's still memed on the internet today. You know, just because of how perfect.
Is that Infinity War or is that Guardians Volume 2?
I was thinking, wasn't it Guardians?
I think it's Infinity War. Mm. But regardless, Dave Bautista's...
Oh, no.
No, but...
It must have been...
It's the,
that's how good he is. You don't even remember.
Yeah. He was that invisible.
Mm-hmm.
He stood that still.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I would have to say... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just, like, from a man who went from... like a professional wrestling career to being like one of the most well-liked MCU characters. Like, to me, that's very impressive for someone like him to do, especially if you've read one of his interviews. Like, Robert Downey Jr. even went up to him at one of the Avengers like premieres and said, "Hey, like, I loved you in Guardians." And he actually said that was such a huge confidence boost to his acting career that he tried harder because because like when RDJ comes up to you and goes, "Dude, I loved you in that movie. You did a perfect job." Like, who wouldn't feel like they're on top of the world, especially with a guy at his caliber?
Fuck out, dude. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think he makes that movie work in terms of comedy because, oh god, like it's just such good timing. All of his lines that he does, like his ad lib lines that he did in Infinity War. Yeah, I think that man's going to, like, have actually a really good acting career as the years go on. Hell, he was in Blade Runner, like, 2049, like, a very serious sci-fi film coming from,
he
like, Guardians.
He was in the James Bond Spectre, I think.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He was in one of the James Bond movies. I can't remember because, I mean, I enjoy those movies. I'm not a super fan of it, so I can't remember exactly which one he was in, but I do remember he was in one of them. So this movie itself, it follows this group who, as we mentioned in the first one, was getting together as a family unit or trying to trust each other. There's still a lot of trust issues in this one, but this one centers around Peter Quill, Star-Lord, who actually his father finds him, Ego.
Mm-hmm.
Ego, who is a living, breathing, talking, thinking planet. Who actually finds him, and Peter's got a battle with, you know, "You left me alone." And then he finds out he's part celestial, part human. Mm-hmm. So he's got all these daddy issues he's got to deal with.
Which, that was a liberty that Marvel took, because Ego is not a celestial in the comics. Like, he's the living planet. Like the living planet isn't a celestial. Celestial is a totally different type of being that actually gives Apocalypse a lot of his powers in the comic book realm. So this was something that Marvel decided to go, "Oh, okay, this is better for the MCU if we make Ego a celestial, because it just fits better, I think, with their world building, you know, instead of having to explain like all of these different types of races in the Celestials. They could just say, "Hey, look at this guy. He's a planet. He's called a celestial. We don't have to explain much."
Tell me more about this, because he's a planet.
Mm-hmm.
He's built up to be this potential world dominating being,
mm-hmm.
And someone who can destroy worlds, or not even destroy them, but, you know, his plan was to take them over.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed a battery or extra power and someone to help him with this plan. And so he found Peter because he knew he could do that. And he actually was looking for Peter because he was one of the only hybrids that worked.
Yeah.
He actually okay.
carried the celestial gene, as Ego said. Like, a whole bunch of Ego's other children actually didn't carry the gene. They may have been spawned from him, but they actually didn't carry it specifically. They didn't have the power.
And there's the Cave of Bones, which I forgot, where you get to see, like, all the devastation and what he's actually done and see him as an evil being.
And those are all of his children that just didn't work. Essentially, they were, like, burned out batteries, if you think about it, where all those bones are. But, yeah, like, Ego is, in, like, comic books, he is a sect of very, very, very old beings. Like, I'm trying to remember the names for them, because it's, like, Ego, And then there's also, God, because I've seen Thor Ragnarok, I say Jeff Goldblum instead of the actual name for the character because I see him with
The Grandmaster.
Yeah, yeah. And so the Grandmaster is the same type.
And the Collector is also one, correct? That's his brother?
Yeah, yeah. So they're these type of beings that are like almost as old as time itself. And so, like Ego is one of those in the comic books, but not in the MCU, right? Just being a Celestial. Like when you read the Celestials in the comics, like they have given some of these supervillains powers that are so far beyond like what heroes get. Like, I mean, hell, Apocalypse took on the entire Marvel hero like pantheon in like Age of Apocalypse. Like, he was so ludicrously powerful because the Celestials gave him that power that the only ones who could stop Apocalypse were the Celestials, where they basically could just pluck the power from him. That's their power level. Like, they're ludicrously powerful. But in this movie, you don't see that. I mean, like, yeah, Ego's powerful, but he's not ludicrously powerful because a bomb can take him out, like, from Baby Groot.
Correct.
As you can see, so...
Well, it's a rocket-created bomb, which have been proven to be devastating.
Just don't push that button.
One of those scenes that I just fell in love with in that movie, again, LOLing in the theater... Now, while we find out that Kurt Russell as Ego turns out not to be the best father in the world, we discover that Yondu actually had better intentions than was initially led on to, which is why he was actually kicked out of, is it the Ravager Corps, by the original Guardians, led by Sylvester Stallone in this, which I forget his name, who delivers his lines in a very Sylvester Stallone-y way.
Oh, yeah. In the code.
What does he say? Yeah, that, and he says, in the horns of a gore, or whatever he said, the colors of a gore, just the way he says it, I do not believe that he was, like, chosen for the role specifically to deliver the lines. That would be, he was like, oh, let's see if we can get Sylvester. Oh, okay, see if you can read these, Sylvester. And then he did it, and they were like, print it.
Yep.
You know,
send it.
Let's go. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
so and Yondu was, proves to be, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, he wasn't a major character. You know, anyway, so even if he didn't do so hot, like, in terms of acting, which I think he was fine, right? But he didn't have too many lines, so I whatever performance he gave didn't affect the movie that much. But that's
in the gold people.
Oh, yeah, the sovereign.
Sovereign. So the perfect people. This is something I was going to touch on. So you look at this, they start the movie out, they're trying to protect these, the Guardians are trying to protect these batteries. We find out that they're kind of like a universal protection service, the Guardians of the Galaxy, essentially, but now they're doing like security work, which is comedic in its own sense, right? They just saved the Nova from devastation from the Accuser, who had a Power Stone, right? That's a major thing. And he found out in that moment he was more than a human because he held the stone.
Yeah.
And now they're just like protecting batteries from a big monster. So we are introduced to the Sovereign. We find out a little bit more, and then they're tracking them down. So it's this storyline where the Sovereign feel like they were taken advantage of by the Guardians. And then at the end, Aisha, the leader of the Sovereign, is so pissed off that she creates, in one of the post-credit scenes, she's creating Adam Warlock.
Yep, Space Jesus now, himself.
Yes, so this is where this movie, this is what I was going to say, this movie definitely was either intended to stand alone or they put things in it and they made a storyline that could start and end with it within itself so that they didn't have to continue it. Because we're not going to hear about Adam Warlock.
No.
Like, there's no way, even in a three-hour Endgame movie, that they're going to introduce him. Absolutely not.
I think Adam Warlock is a setup for Phase 4, not for the ending of Phase 3. Where, like essentially, Endgame is ending Phase 3. And Phase 4 comes after, which I think Phase 4 is going to be more cosmic. And you want Adam Warlock in that, like, cosmic era of Marvel, where they've grounded it too much to have Adam Warlock, like, be the savior in this, like, Infinity storyline, because the comic book is so vastly different because they're fighting Thanos on, like, a makeshift, like, not planet, but base that he's created from the gauntlet, and Adam Warlock's, like, grabbing all the forces together and uniting them. Like, you haven't even established that character. You can't have that in Endgame. You can't have him make an appearance like that. it's just not going to work.
So, quick recap of this movie. We have the Guardians being reintroduced as a more cohesive unit.
Mm-hmm.
And from the previous, we see Baby Groot because he destroyed himself in sacrifice in the first one. And this is not actually that Groot. It is another Groot, mm-hmm. as you would plant another seed. That James Gunn has confirmed.
Angry.
We have,
I love that.
We have, oh, the teenage one, mm-hmm. yes. We have more humor in this one.
Mm-hmm.
We have more of a backstory.
Yep.
We introduce Ego. We destroy Ego. The Sovereign are, like I mentioned, introduced to be a larger part of the Guardians. And I know in the comics, Adam Warlock becomes a Guardian of the Galaxy, so he's a part of their unit at some point. So I think that there was some intention to be together there.
Mm-hmm.
We see Peter Quill and Star-Lord grow together. We see Nebula and Gamora actually become closer as sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see all these battles and these challenges of each other and a lot of sacrifice. And we, you know, it ends with, you know, spoiler alert, Yondu dying after he sacrifices himself to save Peter.
Yeah, Mary Poppins dies. Sad time. For all of
which us. Is what his intention was when he kidnapped him and didn't deliver him to Ego,
mm-hmm.
was to save him. And we actually get to see him save him. So what was your favorite parts of this?
Well, I actually was surprised when it got serious. I think those were my favorite parts. There were three parts when the movie got serious, if you remember, because the movie went silent, like no music was playing. And you had about like 3 seconds of just silence. Do you remember these? If you've seen it recently.
I don't know if I do.
When Peter yells at his father, I had to watch her die.
Oh, like, right, the mother, right.
And then like Kurt Russell doesn't say anything for like 3 seconds, right? You had Gamora like in the fight scene with her sister, and right, she says, like, you just wanted to win and I just wanted a sister. And right, silence.
Yep, okay.
And then you had the third one where Yondu's talking to Rocket. He's like, I know you, boy, because you are me. And then you get that.
Oh, yeah, like, those are major scenes.
Yeah, and so you had like three times where the movie like made you think for like 3 seconds. And and to me, like everybody is like, hey, this is the comedy. This is so funny. And then they're like, we're going to hit you three times with something that kind of makes you think about family for a second.
Yeah, which is intense because in normal superhero movies, they're dealing with that constant tug and pull of like wanting to be better,
mm-hmm.
and feeling like they're not doing good enough. And when you have a cast of 4 or 5 characters in one movie, that's not a team up movie, but it's like a group up movie. As we've discussed before, you get so much more emotion packed in because it's different individuals dealing with different shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to say my favorite part in this movie is, I mean, overall, the tone of the humor is good.
Mm-hmm.
I think the relationship of Ego and Peter Quill is probably my favorite. Like the moment you get to see them playing ball.
Yeah, you were their father and son.
Playing ball with that. Yeah, and he's like, he's gesturing for him to throw it to him. And mm-hmm. it's just like this typical father-son moment. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed those moments mainly because Kurt Russell, I was telling my wife, and I don't know if this just happens every time I watch a movie with someone that I really enjoy in it, but I said he's my number one favorite actor.
Yeah, he's good.
And to see him in this, in that role was amazing. Mm-hmm. Yes, Drax, I have a penis.
Yeah.
It's not half bad.
Right. I told you. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was about to say, I still think Kurt Russell's best performance is in The Thing. Just saying.
The Thing was good. I would in more recent times, I would have to say I really liked him in Death Proof.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, that was the Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah, he was. But that's me just like trying to like figure out what my favorite movie of his is. Mm-hmm. I would say everything I've seen him in is solid. Yeah. Overboard with Goldie Hawn. And
Escape from New York.
Like, yeah, everything I've seen him in, I enjoy. There's not mm-hmm. one where I watch, but I mean, I don't know if I've fucking Tango and Cash.
Oh yeah.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, we like Kurt Russell. That's the moral of the story.
Yep. That's the moral of that story. So I give this movie 2 thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me too. Yep, 2 thumbs up. I like not as many 2 thumbs up as the first one because it surprised me so much, but I still think it was just as deserving of two thumbs, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And the Stan Lee cameo is him talking to alien beings as the Guardians, or it's Yondu. Mm-hmm.
We're about to do 700 jumps.
Yeah, when they're jumping and they fly over him, which that one is alluding to the fact that he is a watcher.
Yep.
And that he, all of the characters or the people that he plays or the people that
he's talking about his own cameos.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that he is, it's like his connection to the MCU is not just like us watching Stan Lee. It's supposed to, from what I understand, it's supposed to allude to the fact that he is an actual being or an entity that is injecting himself into this universe.
Mm-hmm. I was a FedEx postman, like, is what he says. And I went, oh, okay, his Civil War cameo. And so, yeah, I thought it was a great cameo.
Well, going right into it, now after this movie, Sony released their highly anticipated Spider-Man Homecoming, newly cast, accurately cast, in my opinion, with Tom Holland.
Tom Holland is great, yep.
Tom Holland and Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man playing himself and also getting paid, what was it, like $10 million for this cameo appearance?
He's in for like 10 minutes of the film. Yeah, 10, 20 minutes, yeah.
This movie, for me, was solid. And it really showcased what two different companies with both having like a large stake in each universe, and or like Sony doesn't really have a universe necessarily, but they have a stake in, you know, like accurately representing the MCU, because I guarantee that's in a contract somewhere.
Oh yeah, this was Sony's don't fuck it up moment. Like, you could not make Spider-Man bad in this time, because all these Marvel movies have been so good that Sony was probably going, we cannot make a dud, we cannot make a dud, we cannot make a dud. Like, we can't be known as a studio who screwed this up. And
well, because at some point they might go up for sale because of flops, and then, you know, they'll just fucking get eaten up, as Fox has.
Yep, by the great Disney conglomerate, where they own over half of all media properties now. Ooh.
Which I'm not mad at.
I'm not, so far, I'm not mad at. Yeah. Yeah. I like when I first found out that the movie was getting made, I was really interested in figuring out how they were going to connect it to the MCU. And they did a great job, because they did like the post Chitauri invasion cleanup, like as how it starts. I was, when I saw that, I went, hey, like that was real good. Like I was not expecting you guys to like essentially create your villain, like through this like battle in the first Avengers film. For Spider-Man. Loved it. I thought it was a great idea.
That storyline, like, and him getting upset, like, you watch the Vulture, you watch him kind of evolve into this villain because of Tony Stark, which goes, that harkens back to all the other Avengers movies, all the Iron Man movies, all the movies where, you know, like in, I think it was one of the most recent, it was Civil War we talked about, where Vision's statement around, like, you know, when you, we've created these villains, we've created these strong entities that want to go to war with us because we did that. And this is another one where, even though he wasn't, you know, I think that's another reason I like this movie a lot, is he wasn't this massive grandiose villain. I mean, he had the technology to be that and to create some pretty big devastation, but in the end he was fighting for money and for like retribution and revenge almost, which is a storyline in a comic book and in a movie that I enjoy, because again, it's not a Doctor Strange. It's not one of those movies where it's like all powerful, omnipotent things are fighting against equally omnipotent things to where there really shouldn't be an end. They can just fight forever. And there was an end. There was a conclusive end to this one. And I would also say that in this one, it was less, and I'm not saying I don't like really visually stimulating or like colorful comic booky movies. But when we look at the first one done by Sam Raimi and the second one the first one being with Tobey Maguire, and then the second iteration being with Andrew Garfield, there's so much more vivid colors and like recreations of an origin story that when you watch them, I don't know, there's this weird feeling of like they are disconnected, they're their own realm. And this one definitely, to your point earlier, fits in with the MCU. It's not lacking color,
mm-hmm.
but the colors you could see fit right into the puzzle piece of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's a very similar standard, and not to mention they're bringing in, you know, Tony Stark, so that kind of implies it. Mm-hmm. But Tom Holland already being introduced in Civil War, it just kind of continues that, and it's that gritty, like, city Spider-Man, the young Spider-Man, that I highly value and highly enjoy.
Oh, yeah. And, like, it's, you know, Peter Parker, like, the reason he's always been one of the most popular, like, Marvel superheroes ever is just because he's so relatable. Like, he's a young kid. He has no idea what the hell he's doing. He's just trying to do a good job and doesn't have near the resources of any of the other big superheroes. He's literally just a kid, like, trying to, like, just do good in the world. And that's, I mean, part of the reason why Tony sees, like, such good potential in him. But even he has to go, like, full-on dad mode on him, like, in this movie. Like, takes his suit
which makes
him.
Infinity War so much tougher.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, they set it up so well when, like, you know, spoiler alert, Spider-Man's death scene. But if you haven't seen the movie already, that's your problem. Like, it's your fault. And why are you listening to this podcast in the first place? But... Yeah, to me, it created so much more of an impact because you got to see Tony take him in and, like, see Peter Parker grow with him in this journey. And then when that happens, oh, there were so many kids in Spider-Man costumes that were crying on my theater after it was done. Like, I think there were a lot of mad parents in the Infinity, like, the first weekend of Infinity War. Because nobody...
Oh, to have... Yeah.
Yeah, because they all brought their kids. Oh, hey, you're going to love it. And then all these crying kids come out of the theater, or these sniffling kids, because they just don't understand.
And you say, you shut up, you toughen up.
Yeah, exactly. And the kid's not going to understand. No, hey, like, Jimmy, like, their contracts are still ongoing. There's going to be more films. Like you
that
just have
a,
to
that
wait.
That was a special effect, you idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'll do as a public service... favor. I'll just stand outside of the theater, and anybody that comes out emotional from Endgame, I'll just remind them that it's a movie and berate them and call them names and
exactly.
shit to just kind of remind them that, you know, they got to stay in their place.
Yeah.
This movie was one that the first thing that you see is Peter Parker doing the video diary thing. Mm-hmm. I will say that I could have done without that. I'm not a huge voiceover guy. I turned off Kiss Kiss Bang Bang within the first 5 minutes because of voiceover. I told Matt we were watching it on DVD. This was years ago. And I turned it off immediately because of that. And then what's the other one with Colin Farrell?
Oh, what, like Phone Booth?
I actually watched that. I watched that one all the way through.
No, okay.
It's the one with him and, oh my God, I can't remember. It's this movie where it begins, something Rouge or something.
Moulin Rouge?
Anyway. No. Oh, my God. I don't know why I can't think of this. And I know I have the internet at my disposal, but
I'm not following you.
It was a movie where he did voiceover and I turned it off. Anyway, long story short, too late. I just didn't like that first part. It did showcase the relationship that, like, Happy was trying not to have and that Tony Stark was trying to, like, pass off. So it did, I guess, establish a few things. I couldn't get into it. And then the movie started and every part of the movie from, as we mentioned, the Vulture and the Shocker and the understanding of how he became a villain, why he became a villain, and watching Peter Parker not go through an origin story, but we're watching him as Spider-Man, so we don't have to necessarily hear that over again, which I thought was another amazing creative choice, which Sony could have bagged. Yeah, they could have said, no, we're going to do another one.
We didn't have to go, okay, like... We know you're about to get bit by a radioactive spider. Can we move it along? Can we get to the Spider-Man parts, please? I love how they didn't, spend like an hour setting up that. I thought it was a good choice.
What were your other favorite parts of that movie?
I loved the when he's like discovering all of the powers that his suit can do. Like when he's like locked when he's like infiltrating that hangar or something. And he's just discovering that there's like an AI in his suit. And it can, like, do all these cool little things. And because he has to wait, like, a couple hours for the door to open. And he's just kind of...
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just kind of going, oh, okay, well, let's see what else I can do. Like, what a kid would do, right? Like, curiosity about this new toy that he's got. I thought that was great because I do the same damn thing. If I was given a cool-ass right. suit like that, I'd be trying to figure out all the little Easter eggs and extra features that it has. So, yeah, that was definitely my favorite part because it was like my inner kid playing with a bunch of stuff.
In Bruges is the name of the Colin Farrell movie.
There we go. We figured it out.
I don't want you to think I wasn't paying attention to you. I was completely paying attention to you, but it just popped in my brain. And for anybody out there listening who was screaming it at the stereo that they knew the name of it, well, it is confirmed that I do now as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite part is the Washington Monument scene and when he has to save all of his friends, even Flash, including Flash, who should have gone down in the elevator, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
But that scene is probably one of my favorite action scenes. And as far as the comedy, which was right on the coattails of Guardians, as far as like keeping up with that tone, that Ferris Bueller scene where he's running through the yards, anything that reflects back on 80s pop culture, which is, I heard the director had a lot of purposeful moments where he had them watch old 80s comedies.
Yeah.
So in John Hughes movies specifically, so they can get in that mode, which I thought was just fucking rad to set the team up for.
I mean, I love pretty much everything about the movie. It was another thing where I went, okay, Marvel hit it out of the park again. I was expecting an origin story and got something a little bit more. So, yeah, top notch all around. Definitely two thumbs.
Well,
spoiler alert.
We see, the spoiler alert for your two thumbs up rating.
Yep.
We see Tom Holland as Spider-Man and the Vulture go through very, very intense scenes. So, the first one when Michael Keaton is starting to discover that he is Spider-Man. That scene is the epitome of Michael Keaton's acting ability. That, like him looking at him in the mirror, and you can just see Batman in his face.
Oh, yeah.
But he's so good. And I know I just said that Kurt Russell's my favorite. Michael Keaton's up there for me, for sure. Mainly from a movie called Mr. Mom, but also Tim Burton's Batman. But we see them go through this moment at the end, too, where Peter Parker is completely vulnerable and he is stuck. He has superpowers, but he's like crying and he's asking for help. And he finally gets out and then, you know, says, fuck it. I'm going to be something without this suit, as Tony challenged him. And then he finally takes him down. The post credit scene, we see is, one of them, the, Vulture's in jail.
Yep.
And so we see him that he's still like continuing on. He meets someone in that jail. Which I believe plays a bigger part later as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I hope it's not the last we see of Michael Keaton as Vulture as well. I would really like to see his character expanded on, like in future Spider-Man films, because I think one, he's a great actor. Two, I thought they set up this character really well to like continue on. At least I hope.
The other post-credit scene is Captain America speaking.
Oh yeah.
In the video about. In it, which is reminiscent of like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, in other movies where someone comes back and it's a character that in this movie, Hannibal Buress as the gym teacher is playing it at gym, and he's like, he plays it and it's Captain America's like PSA around staying healthy and fit, and Hannibal Buress is making jokes about how he's like required to play it, and then when they're in detention. He does the chair turnaround thing in the video, Captain America does, and he's like, so, you've got detention. So, like, Captain America, I completely forgot that he was in it so much, and not necessarily, like, saving the world, but just being this silly character, which is very different from Cap's, like, overall presence in the MCU, which I thought was pretty dope. The Stanley cameo in this one, he's a tenant in a building. Right? Hitting on another tenant and calling Peter Parker out for, like, stopping a robbery of a car, but the car actually belonged to the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just created all this havoc. But everything that they did in the post didn't necessarily allude to say, like, oh, here's where he's going to be injected next.
Mm-hmm.
It was more so like the Vulture is still available to come back. And we now know that Spider-Man Far From Home is coming out. Which, you know, is going to have is Mysterio in it. They're like completely different, a different cast of characters in it and villains. But in this one, it was another one similar to Guardians where it's like, we're going to potentially build on this, but just in case, we're not going to put too much in these post credits to really, you know, to deviate from what our main point was.
Yeah, yeah, they're not going to put their like all their eggs in the MCU basket, like for this film, because like, to me, like Marvel was taking a risk with partnering with Sony, but it did pay off. So luckily, we get to see more of Tom Holland, and hopefully, he doesn't spoil Far From Home in his interviews. I hope.
There's no way that that's real. And there was a bunch of like social media things where it was like, Tom Holland just put all of Endgame on Twitter. It's like, I don't even think that's possible to put that much content on Twitter. This is all bullshit.
Yeah.
But I love him as a character. And I love the fact that he does, you know, essentially leak everything that's given to him, even if it is real or not. I don't give a fuck. I give this one 2 thumbs up. You already spoiler alerted a 2 thumbs up.
Yep. Thought it was great.
Amazing. Now into what I could just assume is both of our favorites.
Oh, yeah, especially my wife's favorites.
It's, oh, yeah. Yep, it's my kid's favorite. And we are going very far from these other two movies. In Thor Ragnarok, we say far from because Asgard is in the movie. Mm-hmm. We see, you know, we are reintroduced to Thor in Thor fashion and Taika Waititi fashion, but I would say it's definitely still in line with the others where we open up with a battle scene.
Yep. And you open up with like so Thor being Thor, like he's killing Surtur so that he can't bring about Ragnarok into it and they destroy Asgard or Asgard, as Jeff Goldblum would put it as well.
But you can't stop Ragnarok. And that's another one of those that's even though this movie was super funny, it was definitely lending to the fact that as we approach Endgame, Infinity War, like devastation is on the horizon, right? Bad things are coming and you can't necessarily stop it. You just kind of have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So this is one of those movies where I feel like the MCU was almost like planning and preparing people to understand that it's inevitable that destruction will happen.
Yep.
I know we've been having a good time up until now and you've enjoyed all these origin stories and you've enjoyed the group ups and the team ups, but now we got to face facts. We got to close this chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And Thor didn't, you know, it didn't disappoint, but it also definitely, like at the end, I know I'm skipping ahead. We'll definitely talk about the middle part, but the end when, you know, Surtur and Hela basically battle and end up, you know, Surtur ends up driving his heart into the or his sword into the heart of Asgard and destroying it. I mean, that's it.
Yep.
Okay, I'm skipping ahead. I'm not going to get to the post credits because that's definitely alluding to the devastation. Mm-hmm. But it begins with, you know, Thor basically just getting fucked over by Loki again.
Oh yeah, yeah. Loki impersonating Odin, but then Thor finding out what's happening. But yeah, then traveling to Earth, meeting Doctor Strange, which we get to see like more connectedness, right, with the MCU. You know, I've been falling for 30 minutes. You know, just really, really good so lines. Awesome. Just all right. Around, like, all the actors, especially since, according to Taika Waititi, if this is true, 80% of the movie was improv. And so if you think on it that way, most of the lines that you're hearing are just the actors just doing shit, just not even going on script at all.
Which is far from how Chris Hemsworth began his career as Thor, and he was known, you know, as an actor, a very hunky, like attractive actor, but to be able to improv, especially at that level, on a movie at this level, with actors, you know, with Anthony Hopkins and Rene Russo in prior films, but like he's amongst a lot of even Tom Hiddleston, Benedict Cumberbatch, these are
Kate Blanchett, big name actors. Also a huge
Kate Blanchett. Oh yeah. My God, she's massive, right? Yeah, she's incredible. And so you have all these individuals around you, and you are known for being a heartthrob.
Yeah,
being able to deliver lines like that that's a skill.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I would assume some people think it's easy to do, but you know, you're amongst a bunch of other people. Like, people have been working for fucking hours and hours to get these lines and to get these shots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say you fuck it up and you don't do it right. Mm-hmm. And you know, you don't get that end result that you want to with just making up shit. I mean, that happens in comedies, like in sitcoms all the time. Mm-hmm. And they have to do hours and hours of it. So what we got to see was a successful execution of it.
Oh, God, yeah. And two of my favorite characters get introduced to the MCU, which is Korg and Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster. Like, oh, God, perfect casting for him.
Absolutely perfect casting.
Especially since they literally said to Jeff Goldblum, like, just be Jeff Goldblum, like, on camera. Because he didn't need to, like, personify this character. Oh, God, like, anybody says Grandmaster, they're like, nah, yeah, that is Jeff Goldblum. It's like Hugh Jackman and Wolverine to me. Like,
it's so good. It's so well done.
Mm-hmm. Especially with just how, God, like, all of his lines are just gold. You know, what are those sparkles?
Goldblum.
Yes, all of those are Goldblum, yeah. Yeah, I'm the God of Thunder. What were those sparkles coming out of your hands? Like, it's just so, so good. I pardon you from life after he kills the guy. Ah, oh, it's so good. I loved him, and then I was going to say Korg. He mean? Like, all of his little quirks.
Which is voiced by Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
Yeah, his quirks, his character in general, and all those side characters didn't detract from the main story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another great script written and just great movie cadence.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I was going to say is, you know, I mentioned in the last episode, I mean, it's this episode, mm-hmm. but it feels like ages ago, when we talked about Spider-Man Homecoming and the colors and how bright the other versions of Spider-Man were.
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, the colors were so intense because they were on Sakaar. They were in a different realm, which we see those colors in Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah. those really bright fluorescent colors.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a connectivity there of, you know, like we have Earth and Earth is really drab and, you know, there's a lot of violence and there's a lot of fighting that needs to happen because of the separation that's happened with the human civilization in general.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go up into space and there's so many possibilities in space and there's so many colors on Sakaar. When this movie not only introduced your favorite characters, but it was like putting little Easter eggs of other characters. So on the Grandmaster's castle or his
Beta Ray Bill
high rise, they're referencing so many things in this movie. The fact that Jeff Goldblum is brothers with the Collector, which I don't necessarily know if they share, but mm-hmm. there's, you know, if you look deep into it, you can discover that. Or I know it's in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
But when Hulk is first reintroduced into here, we find out that after Sokovia, he in the Quinjet, he went up the Devil's Anus and a Devil's Anus,
which I love that,
an Einstein-Rosen bridge, and he ended up in Sakaar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the comics, that when he goes to Sakaar, that ends up being Planet Hulk.
Yep.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and that's the Illuminati sending him away. Like, is when that happened, when they're like, hey, Hulk's too much of a threat. We need to put him in a capsule, shoot him out into space. And so, like, once again, an MCU liberty that had to be taken because there's no way Tony Stark was going to send him. Like especially MCU Tony Stark wasn't going to elect to send him.
But they don't, when they send him away, the idea is not that the Grandmaster says, like, oh, you're going to be my warrior.
Mm-hmm.
He takes over a planet, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
To me, like, this movie, like, takes so many liberties, like, properly, because, and I don't know about you, but I had superhero fatigue before this movie came out, where, yeah, yes, I was enjoying all those movies, but it's like when you say you could eat your favorite meal forever. Okay, really have that every single day, and tell me you wouldn't get tired of, like, spaghetti and meatballs, right? If that's your favorite thing, like, on the planet.
I don't know.
Like, me, I loved chicken years ago. I hate chicken now because I've been eating it every goddamn day for like the past 4 years. Like I purely am eating it because it helps my fitness goals. I do not enjoy chicken at all. Like steak, I love
still,
because steak
you
is
still
steak.
Loving Reese's peanut butter cups?
Yes. It's more Rice Krispie treats here. They have these ones that are...
Oh, you've changed.
So they have these new ones at the store I go to. It's called Mr. Convenient in the mall. But they have... right? But they're these Rice Krispie treats that have a hint of brown sugar and they're lightly coated in butter. And oh my God, are they the greatest things.
You might have to overnight me one.
I might,
that sounds delicious.
Dude, they routinely sell out at that store because everybody at work on their breaks goes and buys them. Because I'll walk in and one of the people there goes, hey, you coming to get more Rice Krispies? Yes, sir. I am.
As someone's wheeling you in, you got your kidneys on dialysis,
mm-hmm.
The diabetes is just kicking in.
It's worth it. It's totally worth it. Hey, but say if I ate those every single day, I would eventually get tired of them, just like I was tired of the style of superhero film that was being made.
Okay.
But with this, essentially like turning it all on its head, essentially it did a soft reboot for Thor. You know, if you think about it, where he's not this serious character anymore, he's more comedic. But I think it worked 100%. And you got to give Taika Waititi credit for that, because he's always been this wacky comedy style director and gives a lot of freedom to his actors. And so I think he should be commended for being able to pull something like this off and have it be a lot of people's like favorite Marvel movie that's ever been made, because it's a lot of people's favorite because of how funny it is.
Well, you also got to see liberties being made because they have earned, you know, speaking of nerd street cred, they have earned the ability, like they cut Chris Hemsworth his hair off.
Oh, yeah.
Thor does not lose his hair. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was like an opportunity to be like, hey, we can just do this mm-hmm. now. We have the ability to do anything we want now. Because you've already spoken to multiple liberties that have been taken as far as plot lines, storylines, character development. This is yet another movie where it's like, hey, we're just going to like go with this. Mm-hmm. Like the Valkyrie introduced, her and Hulk's relationship as the trainer. We just talked about how Hulk gets to this planet and dominates, which he does in this, but he dominates as a controlled warrior, which mm-hmm. is a different storyline. And that storyline is about getting off of Sakaar because, you know, they have to escape. He's got to get back to Asgard
before Hela can just dominate the world. In a sense.
Yeah, so, and Loki played a part in this, but not a huge part in the fact that he's still that sly trickster. But yeah, we get introduced to Hela. We get introduced to her after Odin goes away mm-hmm. and dies and disappears, and which is
yeah, and essentially sad. His, like, whatever protection barrier he had that kept Hela at bay faded, you know, with his death.
And she's a destroyer. She's someone who helped Odin dominate the realms and still believes that the realms should be dominated and owned by one of the most powerful civilizations,
mm-hmm.
which is Asgard and the Asgardians. And so she's hell-bent on doing this, and she awakes her army of the dead. We watch her just like, again, this is one of those liberties, but when mm-hmm. she's like just throwing knives and shit and just killing everybody, that's one of those things that we talked about on the Doctor Strange episode, where someone is so powerful and has so many powers, how do you possibly destroy them? Because yeah. I have to believe that even when that gigantic fire blazing volcano erupted sword is driving through her,
mm-hmm.
I'm willing to bet she's not dead.
I'm almost thinking, yeah, she like probably won't be. Goddess, like she may be dead from the snap. Who knows? You know, but if he like undoes the snap, could Hela be a future villain, say later on, like in the MCU? Because yeah, her power level was pretty ludicrous. Like nobody had ever been able to stop Mjolnir after its thrown, right? And she stopped it really without even a second thought. It
just crushed it into dust.
Yep. And so like being able to do that, like what if he threw Stormbreaker like at her, like would she also be able to stop it? Because she made Mjolnir look pretty easy, you know.
Well, the Stormbreaker broke through the Infinity Gauntlet
yep.
blaze.
Mm-hmm.
So if it broke through that and went into Thanos' chest, guarantee he could chop her head off with that. Mm-hmm. Now he'd have to get close enough to her,
yep.
Because we saw her in multiple powerful moments where mm-hmm. she beat the shit out of Thor. She also engaged and or activated his mm-hmm. like another section of his power.
Yeah. Well, even full powered Thor didn't even stand a chance. Like him being at peak Thunder God, she was like, okay, I'm gonna still beat your ass, you know? And that's when you got I know I can't, but he can. When it came to that line, like, yeah, even super powered Thor, who can kick the shit out of a Hulk, as we saw, like when he's in that mode, cannot kick the shit out of her.
Yeah, dude. There were so many amazing things brought to the screen in this. You know, you talked about your favorite characters. We talked about some amazing scenes, the visuals in this movie, the music. another thing that I think added to this.
Good
that very like techno-y. Yeah. Oh, very, very like poppy and electronic. And like we mentioned, the colors, the whole landscape of this movie, to your point, just refreshed what we had already seen. And it was something that we didn't know we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came to us, we were just like, this is fucking awesome. And the end credit scene is a very ominous moment. So the ship after Asgard is destroyed, their ship, the Asgardian ship,
mm-hmm.
Can be seen with Thanos' ship looming in the distance.
Yep, it's basically the beginning of Infinity War, because it sets up. Because the beginning scene in Infinity War is basically 5 minutes after that. You know, that's happening.
In the timeline, though, and this is a movie we're going to talk about here pretty soon when we do another tripler,
mm-hmm.
Or three-way, or however we want to talk.
The old triple threat.
Is Black Panther. So Black Panther and Thor Ragnarok run in the same timeline. So
mm-hmm.
it's almost like that moment has to kind of exist, and we know that it's happening. But we also have to know that another film was going to come out in, not succession, but in like parallel with this one. And we have to kind of put them in there to kind of get those stories in there because, you know, Infinity War was, I mean, it's still three movies out.
Yeah.
Actually, no, it's one movie out. So mm-hmm. it was this one, Black Panther, and then Infinity War,
yeah.
and then Ant-Man and the Wasp. So, you know, they're still just, they're jamming them in there. And Black Panther wasn't, okay, we won't go into that. It mm-hmm. is another removal from what we already know, though. So we already know Ryan Coogler and their... The approach to this movie was so vastly different, so amazing for mm-hmm. not only the MCU, but just comic book movies in general. But this one, Thor Ragnarok definitely set the bar at a different level, set our expectations completely like askew. Like we were going into it. I was going into Guardians. I was ready to laugh my ass off.
Mm-hmm.
Going into Spider-Man. I was ready to like, to see a new Spider-Man.
You were ready to have fun with Spider-Man.
I was ready to have fun. Yeah, yeah. Hmm. And see, like, my expectations were too high.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thor, being my favorite character, I didn't have high expectations, but I was really excited to see the movie, and it did not disappoint.
Mm-hmm.
So I give it two hearty thumbs up.
Oh, yeah. Definitely two solid thumbs up. Like, straight up. Nothing even kinked a little bit. Straight on. Super thumbs.
The Stanley cameo in this one is
he's that wonderful barber.
Recently. He's the barber, the old man, and he chops it up and butchers it. And even with butchered hair, Chris Hemsworth looks like an actual god.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably, if I'm going to say, my favorite scene.
Well, I was about to say, according to Drax, you know, this is a man. You know, mm-hmm. it's like a pirate. Like,
you're
mated with an angel.
That scene where he comes into the arena and he like activates that helmet and puts it on slowly and is ready to fight.
Mm.
That's another one of those really big Thor moments for me. And then when Hulk comes out and he recognizes and is, we're friends from work. Like that whole scene is probably my favorite of that movie, even though I could probably tell you multiple favorites. What's your favorite?
Oh, the hammer scene with Korg. Like, you rode a hammer.
Okay.
The hammer rode you on your back. Oh my God! The hammer pulled you off. Yes,
dude. I think I could have guessed that with you. I think we've mm-hmm. talked about that multiple times.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I agree with you. That Korg is like such an awesome addition to that.
He steals every scene he's in. I like there's a lot of like scene stealers in this movie, but whenever Korg is in a scene, he just steals it because almost every single line that is said. By that character is quotable. Or actually, no. Every single word that he says is quotable. Yeah. Hands down.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, we, like I said, this is like down and dirty. We're doing it like in a different style than we have before. Next episode that you hear from us, we're going to be doing Black Panther, Infinity War, and Ant-Man and the Wasp. And it's in an effort to get to Endgame and to mm-hmm. complete this. And it had to do with timing and consistency and Kyle being in Virginia and me being in Idaho. But we're going to make it work. But for now, we have to.
Mm-hmm.
And for now, I'm going to say goodbye. And Kyle, you will say...
Don't enter the devil's anus.
Unless you need to get somewhere really quick.
Yeah, exactly.
Then unless the anus you're really is a late. Good... decision. Yeah, only use the anus when you're really late. All right, peace.
Peace.